everyone. This is Cliff, your host for Earth Ancients, Starling New Discoveries from Our Planet's Distant Past. Welcome. It's Saturday, June 7th. We're already into June, and I am broadcasting from Oakland today, and it's gorgeous. It's a perfect day, and I'm looking forward to getting out and doing some things. Hopefully, wherever you're at, you're enjoying your day to do also. Today's subject is a topic that a number of you have been questioning me, and that is the work of star people, star brothers, ETs, and their potential influence on Earthman. And I want to clarify something, and that is I don't support the ancient alien theory that aliens have come down and built and designed and helped develop mankind. The Great Pyramids, many of the civilizations, the amazing civilizations of the Maya and some of the Central and South American civilizations are featured in Ancient Aliens as having been influenced by the ETs. Well, I don't believe that, and I don't believe it because I've spoken to a number of Native elders from America and Central America, and it doesn't work that way. And the reason I'm featuring today's guest is because there is not only research that shows that so-called star people have come and visited, but that they have, in some places, populated parts of the Earth. But that doesn't mean, and there's no language to the effect that, oh, they built the pyramids, they influenced and started magnificent science and things like that. It's just not the focus at all. So the ancient aliens give it up to the ETs. I do believe that aliens have come, and I believe they're still coming, and that's why I have an interest in that whole focus. During the periods when I was the program director for Whole Life, we did feature people like Bud Hopkins and Stanton Friedman and David Jacobs and even the amazing John Mack, who interviewed hundreds, if not more, people who have been abducted and experienced contact with, you know, ETs. So that brings up our next guest. My guest today is Dr. Artie Sixkiller Clark. She is a professor emeritus at Montana. But the book we're going to talk about today is both, actually, we're going to bring up some parts of Encounters with Star People, but we're also going to talk about her upcoming book where she actually gets into Native people in Central America, which is a fascination of mine. So we'll bring her on. Hi, Artie. Are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So let's start from the top. Why don't you tell us what your interest is in, or has been in working with Native cultures and their contact with star people?
Well, you know, I grew up hearing stories of star people. When I remember sometime during high school or college, I kind of put those stories aside and went on and got my degrees and graduated. And years later, I was hired at Montana State University. And one of my jobs, I was the director of the Center for Bilingual Multicultural Education, which served approximately 25 Native American tribal groups in the Northern Plains region. And one of the things I would do is I would go out frequently to the reservations and I would recruit Native American students to come to Montana State University and to study to be principals, superintendents, or classroom teachers. And on my very first trip in Montana, I had I'd gone to this reservation, and a person on site had who worked in the school district had made arrangements for me, a meeting room for me to meet with students and to recruit them, and of course I could offer scholarships and stipends and things because I wrote grants to the federal government to get scholarship money for first generation college students and students that were underserved. And after we finished, after I finished my spiel and handed out application forms and things, the person who had arranged the meeting, he and I went out for dinner, and then afterwards, as we're coming back across the reservation, he said, "Do you have a few minutes?" He said, "I'd like to show you something." I said, "Sure." So he took me up in the mountains above his small village, and he said, he reached over and he got a pair of binoculars, and he said, "If we're lucky, they'll come." Excuse me. And I said, "Who?" And he said, "Well, the ancestors." So we went out and we sat on this rock overlooking his village, and he said, they frequently come here. I come here all the time." Well, they didn't come that night, but one of the things that I was just amazed was here, all the way across the country, here I had, where I had ended up coming, you know, from the east, coming out here to the west, was somebody telling me that the star people came and visited.
That is interesting. Yeah.
And so as I was driving back to Bozeman, I kept wondering how many other Native tribes have star stories or people who come, who encounters with star people. And so as I traveled around the Northern Plains area, which for me was Idaho, Nevada, even went down into Arizona, and the Dakotas, and Montana, Wyoming. I started asking, you know, when I had free time and in the evenings and on the weekends, you know, "Do you have any stories about star people or UFO encounters?" And I started collecting those stories. Basically, for my own interest, I was just interested in the stories they had to tell. Well, I retired from Montana State, and I've been doing this for years and traveling all over. And when I go to international conferences, I would do the same thing. And I was down in South Dakota. I had gotten a call to come out of retirement and to work with a tribal group in South Dakota that had just received a $5 million grant. And I went back to Washington, D.C., and went through the training to evaluate and monitor this project. And when I got back, I went down to the reservation, and I was having lunch with a group of ladies, and somehow the discussion turned to UFOs and star people, and I started telling them some of the stories I had collected. This one lady looked at me and said, "Well, what's going to happen to these stories when you pass?" And I said, "Well, I suppose they'll get thrown away." And she said, "Well, you have an obligation to write these stories, to tell the world."
Oh, my God.
And so on my way back to Montana, I thought, am I going to take this job or am I going to write a book? And so I decided to write the book. And I called them up and said, you know, I'm going to decline the offer. And so I sat down that very day and started writing and going through all my notes, which were voluminous, and tapes. So that's how Encounters with Star People was born. And, of course, it was a natural for me to go to Mesoamerica because I was in love with John Stevenson and Frederick Catherwood from the time I was a teenager, and I'd always dreamed of following in their footsteps. And
well, let's talk a little bit about encounters with star people before we go to Central America. So, when you were interviewing these people, were you doing it out of curiosity, or had you studied or read the works of a number of American researchers like Bud Hopkins and John Mack? Did they influence you at all?
Not at all. I hadn't been too interested in what other people had said about and nobody had concentrated on Native Americans, basically. Nobody was, other than Von Daniken, who had come along with the ancient astronaut theory of how all these great cities were built in the Americas. And so I really hadn't done a lot of research in that area. It wasn't until much later that I had read. I never had read anything of Hopkins, but I did read Mack's book. And
John
found
Mack.
It very interesting. And a couple of other people that I read, but none of them basically had influenced my research. And of course, when I read their books, one of the things that stood out is their research was so different from mine, because I was recording anecdotal accounts of what happened to people and that they remembered, whereas Hopkins and Mack had used a number of therapy devices, including hypnotism, to get at the actual stories or the stories.
Now that's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point that I want to talk about. In your book, Encounters with Star People, it doesn't appear that any of these people have been put into hypnosis. You didn't need to use any kind of sedated states to extract
None.
The information. And the difference is that the Bud Hopkins and Mack needed to put the other groups in a state of relaxed mindset so that this information can come forth. Do you think that's because the natives were more attuned to this type of contact?
Well, I think they're much more accepting. And so whenever they experience something, instead of denying that it existed, they accept it, because for many of the people I had interviewed, they too had heard stories about star people or when they were growing up. And so the actual appearance of those or seeing those just validated what they had heard as children. Whereas I think that in the non-native cultures, you have more of a fear. Not to say that didn't exist in native country, because it did exist to a certain extent, especially among young people who perhaps were not as well versed in the ancient stories. But I think definitely there's a totally different worldview that we're talking about here, and that one is open to the cosmos, to the wonders of the universe, versus one that is scientific oriented and is constantly looking at proof, and even when they see something with their own eyes, they often disregard it. And for me, I'm a social scientist. I'm not a hard scientist, so I'm interested in the stories that people have to tell. I don't question them. I don't try to make them out to be dishonest. I have a certain feel for people who are telling me the truth and who are sincere, but that's simply a gut feeling. And I respect the people. I enter their homes with humility and try, not to be accusing or to disregard or discount what they have to tell me. I listen. And I record, right. And I don't try to color the interview with leading questions or to trick them or to make them feel that they're on the defensive.
Right. Yeah. No. I really enjoyed your book. I just finished it the other day. I want to ask you a couple of questions. In a number of stories, the people who have had encounters had relatives, grandparents, parents, who had told them about their encounters. And mm-hmm. in a couple of stories, it actually seems like the off-world beings were walking among the natives of different tribes. Did you find those stories interesting? And was that like a? It doesn't seem to be throughout. It's in a few cases, but in those cases where the grandparents of these abductees or contactees had experienced a contact, was it more of what you would say, or what I would say, kind of a living among us situation?
Well, you know, one of my favorite stories that's in Encounters is the story of Leland. Leland was a well-known drum maker on the reservation and had served in World War One. Or World War II, I guess it was. Anyway, he was lived alone on the reservation, and I had gone to see him because a colleague had asked me to pick up a drum that he had made for him. And when I went to see Leland, you know, I went into his house, I took some food, and he asked me to sit down and have coffee with him, which is very typical when you enter a native home. They always offer you whatever they have, whether it's food or drink or whatever. And he started telling me about the strange things that happened on his place. And I asked him what kind of strange things, and he took me out into his backyard, and he showed me a spot on his land where nothing ever grew, and it was a perfect circle. He showed me tire tracks through his field, and he owned no automobile. Hmm. And he told me that this UFO would come, hover over his field. It would lower an automobile filled with people, and I put that in quotes, and mm-hmm. they would drive away. And then the next morning, the car would return, the UFO would return, and they would disappear. And he said one night, they had a flat tire. The driver came to his little house and stood outside the door but never knocked. And he was watching all this, and he said he opened the door, and the driver indicated to him that he needed help, and he went over to the car, and he changed the flat tire. And he said the people that were in the car, he had to make them get out of the car, and they didn't want anything to do with him. The women who were wearing heels didn't seem to know how to walk in the shoes, and all these different things. And he mm-hmm. said once he had finished repairing the tire, then the man gave him silver dollars. And so I said, well, did you keep them? And he said, I kept only one. I sold the rest. And he showed me the silver dollar. Mm-hmm. And he said, I wish they'd have another problem, because I'd like some more of those silver dollars. His story was confirmed by one of his friends who I had gone there. Every time I went back to the reservation, I would go visit him if at all possible. And one day, a night, I went there, and one of his friends was there, and they had seen a sighting a couple of days before I got there. And he told the very same story that Leland told. So, you know, Leland was convinced that they were bringing aliens to the planet, and they were intermingling. They were taking them. He said they wanted to keep them here on the reservation because everybody knows everybody. So they're taking them to a city, dropping them off, and then coming back. And one of the most interesting things of all this is that I interviewed a woman up in Alaska who was, she was non-Indian, and she came to me and she said, I have to tell this story. I know you collect stories from Native Americans, but she says, I have to tell you this story. And she told me a story of seeing this vehicle and how she followed the vehicle to the airport. And these people got out, and she talked about how the women were dressed in summer dresses, which was totally inappropriate for Alaska weather, that they went into the airport, and she swears, and her friend was with her, and her friend told the same story of how all this happened. And she said that the driver turned as... after he got the passengers out, stood in front of her vehicle, because she had followed them all the way to the airport, stood in front of her vehicle, and it really terrified them because he was making it clear that they were to leave and get away from them and not to remember what was going on. When a policeman, an airport security policeman, interfered and told him he had to move on. By this time, she was so frightened, she said, that they didn't follow him anymore, so they didn't know what happened. But she looked me up to tell me the story, and I went to see her friend, and she told the very same story.
That's amazing. And your book has a number of it's filled with wonderful stories like that, and I strongly suggest that our listeners go out and get a copy, Encounters with Star People. Let me ask you a couple of questions, and then I want to move on to Central America. Is there any reference by any of the people you interviewed of any type of technology exchange or any kind of advanced knowledge that is handed down to Native Americans, North Americans, USA?
I had an elder in Mexico tell me that the Sky People had literally given American scientists all the information they needed to cure diseases, for advanced technology, but that for most part they didn't use it because they didn't want find these cures all of a sudden. They didn't want to, you know, come out with this technology all of a sudden. And, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, probably if that decision is totally economic-based. I mean, if you solved all the health problems in the world, what would be the need for the big pharmaceutical companies? Or
exactly.
You know, and so, you know, that could be the only explanation, at least for me. I don't know why you would withhold a cure for cancer. He said that, you know, one of the interesting things is he talked about a 16-year-old cycle. He said that they came for 16 years and then they left for 16 years. And they lived and worked with our scientists, with our leaders, with world leaders, with world scientists, with, you know, helping them. And then they would leave after 16 years, and they would be, and he said they're due back in 2016.
Wow.
So that was an interesting, to me, was really quite mind-blowing. That story I tell in the new book.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask you. Has a book title right there. The new book's not out for a number of months. The title of that new book is Sky People, Untold Stories of Alien Encounters in Mesoamerica. We've talked a little bit, you and I, about your interest, and So I want you to tell our audience about your how you got sparked and your interest in Stevenson Catherwood's book, Incidents of Travel in Central America. Because Stevenson Catherwood were there in the late 1800s, and you know, they basically were the first ones to chronicle these ancient ruins of native people. So tell us a little bit about your interest in this new book and how it all came about.
Well, you know, I was introduced to Stevenson Catherwood back when I was in high school by a teacher who thought I might be interested, since this book, she said, is about Indians, so you might want to read this. And I read the first book, and it was amazing. And then she followed it up with a second book, which dealt with the Yucatan, basically, in
right.
Mexico. And I was just fascinated. And I remember I would tell everyone, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to follow in the footsteps of Stevenson Catherwood. Well, it wasn't... it was kind of a lifelong dream that was put on hold because life intervenes, you know. And
right.
The day I retired at Montana State University, I was coming home, and there was a garage sale going on the Main Street, and I saw a bunch of books, and I can't pass up a bunch of books, you know. I have to go over and see what's there. And here was Stevenson Catherwood's book. And I, of course, I immediately bought it, and I said, oh, this must be a sign. So I go home, and I start planning a trip, reading the book and saying, okay, I'm going to land in Belize City. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. So, but along the way, I had read von Daniken's work about what he thought of the Maya and the Inca and Indian tribes, you know, that their great cities were built by ancient astronauts, or at least by people who taught the natives how to do it. And I decided that, okay, I've been collecting stories all these years from American Indians and from people in Australia and the South Pacific. When I go to international conferences, I've been collecting all these stories. So perhaps I could do this as I followed in the footsteps of Stevenson Catherwood. And so what I did, I set about identifying guides and drivers who could assist me. And I interviewed them using Skype and using the telephone and email, and I got recommendations from friends. And so I had these people who were interested in my work and were very familiar with Stevenson Catherwood, and who were interested in my they too had encounters, and so they assisted me. And so I set out. I in Belize. I started in Belize. I went to Copan in Honduras, which was the first ancient city that Stevenson Catherwood visited.
What year did you start your travels, Artie? What year did you start begin researching Mesoamerica?
2006.
2006.
I basically the stories that are in my book were completed by 2012.
Okay.
And so it was. I collected 92 stories. In the new book, there are 47 of those stories are told.
47. Okay.
A little more than half.
And was your
and the
goal?
The ones I leave out are. Go ahead.
Was your goal to kind of follow the same theme as Encounters with Star People, or was it more historical?
It's a combination of both. I will say Stevenson Catherwood arrived at this site, and this is perhaps give us a couple of lines to what they found and then talk about what I found and then mm-hmm. the people that I met in that area and how I came to know them. And then they tell me my story just like they do in Encounters with Star People.
Gotcha. And what is the, what were the, are these Mayan people or are they?
The majority of them are Mayan. There are, I veered from Stephen's encounter with Ralph once I got into Mexico because there were a number of stories of sky gods that had come to Earth up in the Zapotec country in the Chiapas, and I wanted to go there and follow up on those stories, just like Stevens and Catherine would. They'd hear a rumor about some ancient city, and they would take off in another direction. I did the same thing with UFO stories. When I heard that a sky god had visited this city and what had happened, I decided I was going to go into the Chiapas and Oaxaca, the states of Chiapas and Oaxaca. Of course, Palenque is in the Chiapas, but I went out into San Cristobal. There I met with some Lacandone Maya, and that's the group that had disappeared into the jungle, and they weren't even discovered until the mid-50s.
Right.
And then, you know, they just totally had left when the white man came. When the Spaniards came into to Mexico, they just disappeared and were never found. And then when I got up into Oaxaca, you know, the Zapotec and the Mixtec are the largest indigenous groups in the state mm-hmm. of Oaxaca. I mean,
right.
What, about 85% of the population in that state is indigenous. And 16 languages are spoken up there in the city of Oaxaca City. And
right.
you know, and you find the same thing in the Chiapas. There's 14 indigenous languages there. So you've got tribal groups that range. Well, in the Oaxaca, there were different indigenous groups that range from 350,000 fluent speakers to 61 fluent speakers. So you
okay.
have a wide variety. And so I spent a lot of time among the Zapotec.
Okay.
So their stories are included, too.
Okay. So why don't you give us an example of a contact story, and then I'll ask you, can you give us an example of possibly a historic story where the person who you were speaking to describes what his elders had told him about the contact with Mayan or native people from Central America. But let's start with just a general contact. What's a good example of a story that you encountered in Mesoamerican Native Americans?
My driver, Mateo, in Guatemala, I met him for breakfast one morning, and he says, let's hurry up and eat because I'm taking you to Mass. And we went to Mass, and after the service was over, he said, let's wait here until everyone is gone. And the priest came back in and sat down, and the priest was a childhood friend of my driver. And he explained to the priest, he said, you know, this is Dr. Clark and what she's doing. And he said, I thought your story would be something that she should hear. So the priest begins by telling me the story about being awakened in the middle of the night with these bright lights. And he said, I could close my eyelids and I could still see these lights blinking and all on and off. And he said, I looked out the window and I saw this machine. And he said, I'd only seen lights a couple of times. There was no electricity in our village. And he said that he walked out and he came upon one of the creatures, and he called him a man, and he called him a star man or sky man. And he talked about having a conversation with this man, asking him what he was doing there. And he said that the sky man pointed this instrument at him, and it stung his arm. And the star man told him, he said, "You will never remember what happened." And he said, "I looked out into this field, and here are all the people in the village, and they're lined up, and they're going into this machine." And he said, "The star man says, this way we'll be able to watch this village, the people of this village, and keep track of them." And he said, "I'm wondering why they would want to keep track of us." And he said, "But I made up my mind I was going to remember." And he said, I looked and I saw my friend Mateo, who was my driver, standing in line. And he says, "I run to Mateo and I try to pull him out of line, but he's like stone and he won't move." And he said, "So I'm sitting there on this log and I'm crying because I don't know what's going on." And he said, "The star man comes back and sits with me and tells me, 'Don't worry, don't worry, you will be fine.'" And he said, "I looked at him and I said, 'I will remember this night.'" And the star man left him, and he decided that he would pick up a rock and he would take it home with him, and then he would put it at the foot of his bed and the next, or at the foot of his hammock, sorry. And at the next morning, if he got up and there was a rock there, he would know that what he saw was true. And if there was no rock, he would know he had been dreaming. And he said, "When I got up, the rock was there." So I know what I'm telling you is true.
And was there any discussion? Was there a discussion as to what was happening to this village going into the machine? Were they just testing them or analyzing them or marking them, or what were they doing?
No discussion at all, because he didn't know and Mateo didn't know either. But, you know, the only experiences he had was his talking with the star man, who told him that he was going to be keeping track of their village. But it was an interesting story, and a priest told it to me, so I kind of think it might be true.
They're not gonna...
the Catholic Church.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting story. So let's why don't you tell us about a story that is more historic, about a potential influence or something that was handed down from the elders. Now, I've worked with a number of Mayan elders, most notably Humboldt's men in the Yucatan area, who describes a tremendous amount of influence of star people, but not the influence of technology, more of just they came and they were communicating and they were exchanging ideas about what was out there. And this is thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, and most Orthodox archaeologists don't discuss this because to them it's a myth. But this is a tradition. It's a tradition handed down orally in the Maya, by the Maya. So I'm curious to learn what you may have discovered that's in a historical vein.
You know, one of the things I'd like to comment about before that, talking about that, is that, you know, at one time in history, the stories, the ancient stories were the stories we live by. It was our way of recording history. They were oral, but that's how we passed down the history of our people to our children. And then our children passed it on to their children. But when the scientific age was, I don't know, industrial age or whatever happened, the Renaissance age, all of a sudden you have that scientific theory coming in that if something can't be proven, then it must be false. It's just a legend. It's just a myth. Now you see, you know, so much of that history was lost because it was disregarded by those you know, there in the scientific world.
Right.
Now so much of that, those stories are being looked at again, and, you know, I've even, back when I was at Montana State University, there was a representative from NASA that came to our campus, and the dean called me and to come to his office, and I met with him, and he said he's interested in the star stories, in the star legends of the people in the Northern Plains area. And of course, I, you know, was not in any position to represent the Northern Plains tribes in discussing star stories, so I gave him some names of people that would more tell those, you know, ancient legends from the different tribal groups. But I thought it was interesting that NASA would suddenly be interested in those stories. If you go on a NASA site, you'll find even a section that's devoted to American Indians. And so I think those ancient stories are being looked at more closely by archaeologists, astrophysicists, NASA. But one of the most interesting stories that I heard was a story about the people of the Shining Hand, and my guide and I had, he asked me, he said, "Would you know, would you like to take a roundabout way back to Guatemala City, and we'll just stop at some unknown sites that haven't been excavated, and we'll just check out some things." And I said, "That sounds great." So we stopped at this one site that he said, this is an ancient site that the government has never been really interested in. So we pulled off, and we're going to have lunch there. And this elder came to us and invited us to come to the site. He had a hut that had actually been built by the government, apparently they had some plans to excavate the site and then changed their mind, and they just abandoned the whole project. Well, this elder in the village had just simply moved into the site and decided that he was going to be the caretaker, since the government wasn't interested, so he moved in so looters couldn't come and dig up the site. Mm-hmm. And he proceeded to, he had told me that at one time he had been in America. He spoke very good English, and he took me and showed me his, he had a little English library that was everything from dictionaries to Danielle Steele. I mean, he just said, so before I left, I was getting ready to leave, and I said, "Here, I want to give you all the paperback books I have with me." And so I gave him a whole group of paperback books, and he said, "Well, you know, in return, I want to take you on a tour of the site. Let me give you something in return." So he took me to this place that there were three sides standing of this structure. And above the doorway were these red hands. And I know you've seen those hands different places. If you've traveled throughout, you know, in native country, you see these hands depicted in just a handprint. And he said to me, and these hands were across this doorway, and he said, "You know, if you look at modern architecture," he said, "you'll see these hands, and people say that the builders always put their handprint on a building, and that's what these handprints stand for." But he said, "That is not true." He said, "These are the hands of the Shining People. And the Shining People are the people who traveled the universe collecting knowledge. And everywhere they went, they left their handprint." And he said, "I come here every morning and I sit to remember the Shining People, because they are the people of the Brotherhood of the Red Hand." And so he said, "The Shining People still travel the world, they just don't leave their handprint anymore. But he said the shining people are the ones who leave those handprints, and they are the gatherers of all the knowledge. And they keep that knowledge because when this world is destroyed, they will have the knowledge of the world, and they can help rebuild it.
Hmm. You know, that is a continual theme that I hear about with any of this alien encounters, is that we're destroying the Earth, and we got to get our act together, and we got to have our consciousness raised because Mother Earth has taken a beating. Is that still prevalent in Central America, that theme?
Well, you know, a lot of the elders that I talk to, you know, say that, you know, that they were supposed to guard the Earth, and that they didn't do a very good job of it, that they were the caretakers. Mm-hmm. And the time will come. I mean, we're living in the fourth world, and the Maya believe there will be a fifth world, and that when that time comes, then they will survive and they will be given another chance to get it right. And I think if there is a cataclysmic event, if anybody can survive, it'll be the Maya. They are the most resilient people I have ever met in my life.
They're kind of hardy, yes.
Well, they're amazing. I mean, when you think about the majority of them still live as their ancestors did centuries ago. They grow their own food. They live on very little. If they have two outfits, it's amazing. You know, I mean, I'm talking about people that live in the small villages, you know. I mean,
right.
They can survive on practically nothing because all they have, they have whatever they need.
That's a wonderful story of that building in Guatemala City. Is there any other stories that have a relation to ancient structures or ancient technology that you have run across?
Well, there are several of them, but I met an elder in Copan, Honduras, who just by accident he knew who I was. But of course, Copan Ruinas is a village that I don't know why they call the village Copan Ruinas and the ancient site Copan. You'd think it would be just the opposite, but it's a village of about 10,000 people. And when you arrive there as a stranger, if you stay more than a day or two, everybody knows your business, and what they don't know, basically, they make up. They know who you are, you just don't know who they are, you know, and it's the kind of town, there are no street names, and if you want to find somebody, you either say, well, you know, this is the person I'm looking for, and everybody knows who that person is and where they live, you know, and so I was on the site, this elder stopped me, and he told me about being there when Spenden, who was the first serious archaeologist who came to Copan, hired him as like a little go-to boy. He would bring them water, he would bring them food, he would run and do this, and he would run and do that, and then had told him that if he would learn English, that he would pay him more. And at that time, he was paying him like 10 cents American a day, you know. And
yeah.
So when he learned to speak English, and he said, by the time I was 8 years old, I was speaking English fluently. But he told me the story about how he and his friends, to earn extra money, would go up into the caves outside Copan, and they would, on the weekends, they would look for artifacts because there were things buried in the mountains. And he told me the story about coming upon this, what he called the Silver Man from the stars. And it was I suppose if I were to describe it, it wasn't the way he described it, but it was like a spacesuit, you know.
Ah.
And inside this suit was a skeleton, and he carried it back to these archaeologists who paid him $5 for it, but became very excited because they boxed it up immediately, sent it to their university, and he said it was the one regret he had in his life, because it was, as he got older, he realized what he had done, that this was probably proof that there was a connection between the Starmen and the Maya people. And he said,
so let me ask you real quickly, Artie, was that a full body in a suit, or was it a small...
Well, it was a skeleton. It was a small man.
It was a small man that he described. Okay, and he was in a suit, though.
Right. And apparently, wow. And what he thought had happened is that this person had died and they left him behind in the cave.
Oh,
found
I
him
see.
In a cave, okay? And
right.
And so he felt that they had left him behind. I also met another elder who told me a story that the aliens who walked the earth did not bury their people as you would normally think of a grave, but they buried them sitting up, so that they would dig these square pits, and they would set the alien inside, and he attributed the UFOs coming back to that site as they were coming back to retrieve those skeletons. And one woman told me that her father had seen them retrieve one, and when they dug it up, that he came alive and walked on, and she said he became reborn.
Oh my God.
I know. I've heard some fantastic stories. And they're all in the new book, which will be released December 14th. some interesting stories. And you know, the other thing that is, the stories are different than the stories that I collected among American Indians, because these stories often, too, and you see this occasionally as colored by evangelism that has seeped into the culture, particularly in Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the evangelic Christian movement that's going on, and also the superstition of witches, that
right.
somebody has been cursed, who has seen something, or something happens to them that they have been cursed. And I heard of healings, which I didn't hear among American Indians. I heard of healings. So some very interesting stories.
Wow.
I think you will be fascinated.
We just have a few minutes. I wanted to ask you if you had a sense of star people in the Mayan history who may have guided Mayans to understand the cosmos a little bit better. Did you get into that? That's a little more technical than the first book, but I'm just curious, is there any of those kinds of stories?
Well, there is one story in there that we talk about. I met a man who said that we had a star map, and he talks about that, repeatedly I heard that the Maya were not assisted by aliens, and they totally disregarded von Däniken's theory of the ancient astronauts. But I would hear stories that we are the descendants of the people who built these cities, and we are the star people. We are the descendants of the star people. That they were our relatives, and they came here, and they peopled the planet Earth. And we are their descendants. Now, the interesting thing about that, to me, is that among the Maya, there's no stories that tell that once they arrived here, their history began on planet Earth. It's as though the Maya, the history of the Maya begins 3,113 years ago, or BC, but that they already had their culture and everything about them. Suddenly they just are here on planet Earth.
Right.
They didn't have somebody that taught them how to live. They didn't have, well, I suppose Kukulkan had a huge influence on them, but unlike the Aztec, for example, who believed that their god was going to, and that's why they were so susceptible to the Spaniards coming there and trusted the Spaniards. The Maya are very different. They didn't have that. And one of the things that one of the Maya elders told me that I thought was just it stays in my mind is that he said, we weren't impressed by the Spaniards and their advanced technology because we knew a culture that had advanced technology, and that was
right.
us.
Right.
And, you know, and I would hear, I'd say, well, what happened to this great advanced technology? And they said, well, you know, a cataclysmic event occurred. And whenever something like that happens, it doesn't matter what kind of statues you've built and what kind of cities you have, you are concerned about the survival of your people, of your family. And this one elder told me, he said, one day people in New York, for example, may look upon the Statue of Liberty and call it, you know, the goddess of the flame. When
yes,
this place is
exactly.
destroyed and we start all over again. You know, he said, that's how that kind of thing happens. And he said, something happened.
Yes.
And it was so devastating that, you know, we left the villages behind, or the cities behind, simply to survive in the jungle.
Well, that's exactly what I believe, is that the Maya are significantly older people. And it's a scientific fact that the Earth did experience a catastrophic event 9,500 BC, 12,000 years ago, that basically wiped the planet clean. So,
right.
And the elders that I speak with, the Mayan elders, all discuss the fact that they come from a very advanced civilization. And it's being shown now with a number of researchers that these cities, Chichen Itza, Uxmal, Palenque, you can go through and list 100, were developed, and if you just look at them, they're engineering feats. And that's they're not from a simple people. They're from a very sophisticated people. So that knowledge is handed down to them. So,
but if you claim that knowledge was given to somebody from the stars, that validates that there was no indigenous group, no Indian
yes.
group that could possibly be
yes.
that intelligent.
And that's the hardest thing, yeah, about the ancient.
Yeah, and that's what
theory.
You know. Basically, you're dealing with is that, you know, and the same thing. You know, look at Chaco Canyon. You know, look at some of these places in America where amazing things. You know, cities have been built, and
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, I actually need to get down to Chaco Canyon. That's a beautiful structure down there. Artie, we have just a few minutes. Are you going to be at any conferences this year before the new book comes out? Can you give us your schedule? I'm going to give people your website here in a second, but. Do you have?
You know, I haven't been invited to speak anywhere. I just, you know, I've been. I just spoke at an IONS conference, and but I don't have anything coming out. But I do try to make the announcements on my webpage. I don't have anything. I'm going to be in New York. I've been invited to speak at a college. In New York in
okay.
October, but other than that, I have no, outside of Buffalo,
okay.
I guess it is.
Well, let me give everyone the email address. It's www.sixkiller, sixkiller.com, and that's your website. And the first book was Encounters with Star People, Untold stories of American Indians. And the new book, which I guess is coming out in the fall, is that correct?
December 14th is the publication
date. It's actually coming out in December. Okay. The new book, which I can't wait to read, is called Untold Stories of Alien Encounters in Mesoamerica, Sky People, by Artie Sixkiller Clark. Artie, fantastic. I definitely want to get you back on the show when the new book comes out. Maybe we can drill down a little bit deeper. And
I'd love that.
We'll definitely promote the book and hear from you on maybe some other stories related to
if your audience is interested in the Maya, this really gives them a new insight into what the real people, as they call themselves, have to say.
Mm-hmm. Right. Fantastic. Thank you very much, and that's
You're
it for
welcome.
Today's show. We'll be back with you next week on a fascinating new subject. So I hope everyone has a wonderful day.